Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hey friends, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. We are here to connect faith to life. We're trying to bring the mind of Christ to bear on the matters of the day. We are trying to enter into the conversations of the day in ways that reflect the truth of God's Word and the mind of Christ. And so, how do we do that? What are the things that folks are talking about? What are the things that we need to be equipped to talk more effectively about? You and I have been talking some this week about an event taking place in Washington, D.C. It's called the International Religious Freedom Ministerial. It's happening right now, and one of the people who is there covering the event, her name is Morgan Lee. She writes for Christianity Today, and we have the opportunity now to have a conversation with her about what she's experiencing there in D.C., the things that she's hearing, and hopefully the expectations and hopes for outcomes for this very important religious liberty event.
Go ahead.
Morgan Lee, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Carmen, how are you?
Well, I am well. We are excited to have you on with us today from Washington, D.C. and the International Religious Freedom Ministerial. Why don't you just start by telling us what it is and who is there?
So this ministerial is something that was organized by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and he is organizing it to convene figures who are working on religious freedom from around the world, honestly. So they invited people from 80 different countries. I'm not exactly sure how many have showed up to this, but it includes people who are actually politicians and leaders of those countries, but it also includes a lot of people who work for nonprofits in these countries as well. And it's a three-day event with a lot of other side non-official events to give people the chance to encourage each other on issues of religious freedom, to tell stories, to network, and to build a larger community around it.
And so, friends, Morgan Lee is covering this event for Christianity Today. She's got articles posted at ChristianityToday.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at M-E-P-A-Y-N-L, or you can follow it at CT Magazine. So, Morgan, the first story that I see that you've posted related to this is beginning to tell the stories of persecuted Christians. And you lead off with the story of a pastor in China. Can you tell us some of his story?
Absolutely. His name is John Cao. And John came to the United States when he was in grad school, which is where he met his wife, who is American and is the individual who was telling the story yesterday. And one of the things that's really interesting is he decided that he was going to keep his Chinese passport and his Chinese citizenship even after he'd spent time in America because he wanted to be able to travel back into China and do missions work there. And so his primary way of doing missions work, though, has been building schools in some of China's more rural provinces. And through that work, he actually got connected and started learning about these minority groups in Myanmar. Myanmar is full of different minority groups. Often who are really intensively persecuted by the government, are often really poor, and he built more than a dozen schools for that community. But because these minority groups often have a really tense relationship with the government, it's highly unlikely that the government was really excited about the work that he was doing or drawing attention to. He was specifically working with Chinese Christians, too, to come over to build those schools, and he ended up being arrested last year and was sentenced this year to 7 years in prison. So his wife was the one who got on stage yesterday and got to share some of her husband's story.
So again, folks, we're talking with Morgan Lee of Christianity Today. She is in Washington, D.C., covering what we are using as a hashtag, IRF Ministerial. It is the International Religious Freedom Ministerial sponsored by the U.S. State Department. Morgan, the other story that I know you have already covered, and you've been covering it over time, but it's kind of exciting to hear some developments in the story of Andrew Brunson. So I'm going to let you break that news to our audience.
So it looks like Andrew Brunson, as of today, has been allowed to leave prison. You know, we've been covering the story for a while. He specifically, he had a big court case last week that some people were hoping the charges would be dismissed against him. I'm sorry, just for all of your listeners who are less familiar with the story, he's an American pastor who's been held in a Turkish prison for almost the past 2 years. He served for nearly 25 years as a pastor in Turkey, and the government has accused him of basically trying to sabotage the Turkish government. So the nature of the charges has not been super specific and concrete. So the encouraging news from all of this is it looks like he's going to be going under house arrest, which what was really interesting yesterday is that his daughter also addressed the ministerial and spoke of the really horrible conditions in the prison. And so even for those who may feel like this is not necessarily justice being brought to an end, I think there is an encouraging sign just about the fact that he will not have to remain in these really horrible conditions in the prison.
Yeah, I took it as a really positive step in this particular case. I think that one of the things I appreciate about this event that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is hosting is that it really does shine light on issues that people are experiencing around the world, certainly not just Christians. I mean, we are talking about broad concerns related to religious liberty and religious freedom, and many of the people around the world who suffer as religious minorities, you know, are not Christians. But I think that for people in the United States, raising awareness about the concerns of Christians around the globe and other persecuted religious minorities is just such an important thing to have happen. So I'm interested to know, I know you're a curious person, you're a person who asks really good questions. What are some of the things, as you move around at this event, what are some of the subjects that people are talking about?
Yeah, I want to tell you about an event that highlighted some of the work that's being done on religious freedom in Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan is not necessarily a country that I know groups are necessarily, it's on the radar, but Uzbekistan is listed as a country of particular concern, which essentially means that the U.S. government doesn't necessarily think that the way that they're treating issues of religious freedom right now are, you know, it's being done so in a positive way. However, this event that I attended that was highlighting the work that was done in Uzbekistan was making the point that in recent years, the Uzbeki government has taken a lot of steps to kind of change how it approaches religious freedom and to try to make it easier for people who are of minority faith. This is a country that was part of the USSR for many years, and then after the fall of the USSR adopted some of the same ways that Russia had been treating religious freedom, which is not necessarily a positive thing when it comes to the area of religious freedom, but in recent years has decided that it wants to be more proactive in how it extends rights to people of minority faith. And so that was something that was actually attended by a number of top government officials in the Uzbek government, and it was hosted by Chris Seipel, who is a really important leader in the Institute for Global Engagement, and he's someone that works very closely on religious freedom issues. And yeah, there was a lot of encouragement about what that might mean for even the rest of the region, where Uzbekistan is a big leader to its Central Asian neighbors.
So that's really exciting. We actually talked yesterday with Brian Grimm here on the program, who is there as well, talking about the economic impacts, you know, how religious freedom actually promotes human flourishing through economic development and giving more people more opportunities to do more things. And Chris Seipel is a good friend, so I'm excited to know that he's there. Glad to know that he's engaged in as well. All right, we probably have time for you to tell us one more story or highlight one more thing. So if I were going to be curious and ask one more really good question, Morgan Lee, what would it be?
I want to tell you one more about this other interesting study that I went to for a group called Hardwired Global. And they had an event this morning about a study they released called Protecting Children from Violent Extremism. You know, a lot of times when we're thinking of persecuted Christians, we're not necessarily think of persecuted Christian children or even just like how religious extremism really hurts children. And so this particular group was working in the Middle East in areas that have been deeply affected by ISIS and trying to teach curriculum to teachers to help these students who have, you know, been in the brunt of an ISIS regime for the past couple of years, helping them to learn respect for other religions, to help them learn pluralism, to help them learn how to not necessarily respond in just violent and vindictive ways, which is maybe what they have seen for the past couple of years. And they shared some, like, very encouraging results from that particular study. You know, sometimes we think in this conversation that we need all these really big declarations or pieces of legislation, but it's always really interesting to see where the grassroots component is as well, and some of that is going to be in elementary schools.
Absolutely. I talked with a friend who recently visited Jordan, and she told similar stories about, you know, the real impact that's happening is happening with children who have, in this case, these were folks from Iraq, Christians, Iraqi Christians who are sheltering in Jordan, and really just talking about how much trauma, you know, PTSD trauma work there is,
exactly.
And how they're like using art therapy and all kinds of things. So I do think you're exactly right. I think that focusing on children and how we can intervene on their behalf, because after all, you know, what happens in the future is going to be dependent on who they grow up to be and how they see the world. So Morgan Lee, again, friends, you can follow her at CT Magazine. You can read what she's writing at ChristianityToday.com. You can follow her personally on Twitter at MEPAYNL. Morgan, thank you so much for joining us on Connecting Faith.
This was fun. Thank you, Carmen.
Thanks a lot. All right, friends, we have about we got about a minute before we have to take a break. And so let me warm you up to what's coming, because this the conversation that that I'm going to have in just a minute, I will just admit to you, was a little bit outside of my sort of realm of thinking and knowledge. Her name is Plum, and she is an artist. She's a music artist. She is now also an author. And she's got a movie coming out. So maybe you're saying to yourself, I can't believe, Carmen, that you don't know all about Plum. Well, I do now. And so let me share with you that she has a new project coming out. It's called Beautifully Broken. But the book that she's coming to share with us is actually called Fight for Her, Even If You Have to Fight Her. And it's a really compelling wonderful look into the lives of moms and their daughters. I think that's the best way to describe it. All right, so you're listening to Connecting Faith. Next up, Plum. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I am privileged and excited to be joined today by songwriter, performer, artist, and author Plum. She is she's got a book to share with us called Fight for Her, Even If You Have to Fight Her, which I just love. And we're going to talk about it. We're also going to talk about her new album and her forthcoming movie. So Plum, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So this book is a joy. I particularly like that you're just so forthright about being surprised that you've written a book for women. So I'm just going to let you start there. Like, why is that a surprise to you? And then to whom is this written?
Well, it's a surprise just because I don't feel like I'm well-versed in things that I consider feminine. And so I just feel like I'm the one needing to read books to women as opposed to the one writing one. And I have been told by several people pretty recently that this is not really a book just for women. I've had several men tell me it was incredibly empowering and encouraging and inspiring to them as well the way they should, to love better themselves. But the premise, of the book, Fight for Her, Even If You Have to Fight Her, the name was birthed out of a conversation I had with my then 2.5-year-old who was pitching a fit, and to correct her behavior, I found myself saying, I'll fight for you even if I have to fight you. And it was to get her to do what I needed her to do, for her to remember that she's not in charge and she needed to change her attitude and all those lovely things. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I realized that is a book one day. And so fast forward, I start writing the book, And I think it's going to be a book for the mothers and daughters, me writing it from the perspective of being a daughter, having a mother, and now being a mother, having a daughter. And as I got into it, I realized, nope, this is a book for all daughters, all women. They need to know that they've been fought for. They need to be loved enough that they sometimes are fought with. And you're kind of sometimes, you're one or the other. You've had people in your life that fought for you, like I did. I had an amazing mother and an amazing father that I talk about, which is where I think some of the men's responses are coming from. That my dad would kill tigers for me. My dad spoke truth over me, whether I liked it or not. But he would tell me when I felt stupid or ugly or fat or uncool, he would tell me that I was beautiful and that I was exactly how God made me to be, and that I was wanted, that I was loved, that I was liked, and that he would fight for me. My mother was willing to stand up to me and stand up to me. She was not unafraid to say no. She cared more about me being holy than she cared about me being happy. And so I didn't realize how empowered I was until I became an adult and a parent myself. And since I can remember, like since as far back as my memory goes, I have sort of had this stand up for the girl getting picked on, or the girl that's left out, or the misfit in the bunch, or the one that doesn't fit in with the quote-unquote in crowd. I've always had a heart to befriend her because I feel like I am her. And the more that we befriend each other, when you unite together, there's a lot of power and confidence in an army of two and three and four and five. And I remember my mother saying to me, if you befriend the underdog, you'll have more friends than you can count, because the truth is we're all underdogs. And for people that think that they're better than others or like to make other people feel bad, deep down inside they feel bad, and that's why they make others feel that way. And you just be kind to everyone, even them, and you'll have more friends than you can count one day. And so I was raised that way, and I have this memory at 15 of my very best friend, who was verbally and emotionally abused by her stepdad daily. I was doing homework with her in her kitchen, and he came in, and he said something so incredibly degrading to her. And I was probably 90 pounds soaking wet in ninth grade, and I stand up and I push the chair back with my knees, the backs of my knees, and it was kind of disarming to him, and he turns and I said, "You have no business speaking to her like that. She's beautiful and she's smart, and my father would never talk to me like that." And I look back and I think I should have been afraid to speak up for her to him because of the way that he was, but the reason I was empowered to do that is because I had been fought for, and I had been told the truth of what God said about me, not just what my mom and dad said about me. My parents spoke the truth of what God says and how God sees me into my life, and I knew that my earthly father would drive down there and give him a piece of his mind if he said or did one thing to me. And so I had this sense of confidence in me because I know who I am and I know who fights for me. And as I got older, I realized ultimately that's our Heavenly Father, and we live in a time and in a culture where women especially are very catty and comparison and jealous and gossipy, in a time more than ever that we should be uniting with each other. And one of the ways to do that is to empower each other. And one of the ways we do that is by befriending one another. And one of the ways that we do that is not by gossiping and comparing and being jealous and catty, but by saying, "Can I take you to lunch?" Or if you just had a baby, how can I bring you a meal? Or if you're moving, can I help you pack a bag? If you're going through a hard time, can I take you to lunch? And get to know each other. And then when we see some pitfalls coming, some red flags being waved in front of our lives, then we also have the authority to speak hard truth into each other's lives and say, "Hey, I love you, but what you're doing is destructive. What you're doing is dangerous." And so it's a give and a take. It's a practical guide to revolutionize the way we communicate with each other that is about how to fight for each other, but also how to be fought with well. And so it stems from community. It stems from not just my experience as a daughter and now as a mother, but even as a woman, as a friend. One of the key components that God uses in my life, uses my life for his kingdom for, is that I had a very broken marriage. God restored that, and I go and share that story now. And the reason I can tell a story of redemption is by God's grace, and the key component that he used was the community in my life, more specifically my very, very best girlfriend in the world. And when we were first separated and everything was falling apart, and I was sitting in her presence, bawling my eyes out, complaining and going on and on and on about all the awful things my husband had said and done, and how frustrated I was and how angry, et cetera, et cetera. And there was this pause, and she's crying with me, and she's proven she loves me. And she says, "You know what? This is awful, but you're also hard to be friends with." And it was like, what? And in that moment, she showed me love. Like, she said, "You're this marriage is not going to be restored to what it was. That's dead. It's broken. It fell apart. But what God could do is to restore each of you, and then maybe you back together. Now, whether you get back together or not, it's not coming back together. You staying the way that you are, and you're selfish."
Wow.
And on and on and on. Like, she was able to go into that more, and it makes it sound like she's so cruel, and it's...
No, she could speak, right? So, but that's, I think that that's what the book so helped me put words to. And again, friends, I'm talking with Plum. We're talking about her new book, Fight for Her, Even If You Have to Fight Her. We're going to also talk about Beautifully Broken, her new album. And then we'll also get to a movie project that she's working on. But one of the things that I loved about the book, Plum, is exactly what you're pointing out right now. And that is that there's power in the kinds of relationships that women can have if we will be the kind of friend that your friend was to you. If we will be not only our authentic selves, truly empathetic toward the person, you know, with whom and to whom we're trying to speak truth, but then genuinely truthful. Like, it's not enough for me to sit idly by and let you complain. It's important and imperative that I actually, you know, come alongside you as a sister in Christ and say the hard thing that you can only hear from your best friend. You could not have heard, you could not have heard that from anyone else.
Right.
So, okay, let me,
so true.
Let me give people a taste. Well, let me just give them a taste of what's in the book, because I do think that it's helpful for people like to, okay, how's the book put together? Like, could I engage with it? Is it my kind of thing? Let me just go ahead and say, if you're listening to this and you're a woman, this book is for you. And I particularly loved how straightforward and concise the discussion questions are at the end of each chapter. And I think these questions are excellent. So let me just give people a little taste. So at the end of chapter one, friends, there's these three discussion questions, which are great. Who are some of the most influential women in your life and why? Whose voice do you hear in your head helping you to turn from temptation and turn from temptation to do the wrong thing? Like, I know who that is. I know what that voice is. Why is it important to you to fight for the people in your life? Like, that's just from the first chapter. This is so rich and tasty and meaty, and I want to continue this conversation, but let's take a quick break. Friends, my conversation partner today is Plum, and I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we will be right back. Hey friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Privileged to be joined in conversation today by Plum. We're talking about her new book, which is Fight for Her, Even If You Have to Fight Her. We've got some copies, and so in order to enter a drawing for those, if you'll email me at carmen@myfaithradio.com, that's carmen@myfaithradio.com. I know you, your appetite is already whetted, and you want one to taste and see what Plum has for you here. So let's... if it's okay, let's talk. Let's change gears. Let's talk about Beautifully Broken. What are people going to hear in this new project?
Well, it's a great segue between the two, because they were written simultaneously, the book and the record, and they speak to each other, and so they pair really well together. And that was not some shameless effort for me to, you know, I'll write a book and a record and make bank. Like, it's because the outpouring of my heart is for the broken, and more specifically the broken girl, because I am one. And so when I was even just going I was passionate about. Every record I've made has been a sort of journal brought to life through music. And so from the last record I put out until now, you can kind of put in one of my records and say, okay, this is where, you know, this is what she went through. And they kind of document that season. And what this season has been about for me is after going through a broken marriage and seeing God restore that, after having close friends and family and community kind of put the mirror up to me about some of the things that I needed to work on, I felt incredibly empowered. I felt incredibly thankful and was just so much more self-aware. And so I kind of, you know, jump out there and I went to promote the last record that I released and I started to tour. And then I realized I was still human and I still have things to work on. I still have things to grow from. And although you subconsciously know that, there's a part of me that felt like what I'd gone through was so huge that, man, I've really come to a place where I'm at a really great spot and I'm not so broken anymore. I can really go out and, you know, fight for, you know, everybody. And I get out there and I had encounters of tremendous insecurity. I had experiences of tremendous anxiety, challenges, temptations, weaknesses brought to my attention, my pride in major check. I mean, just left and right. And then some of the very closest, most sincere, deep, authentic friendships I've had that have been a part of fighting for me and walking alongside me for multiple decades, watching their lives take horrible turns for the worse, where there's tremendous brokenness that happens in their marriages and in their lives, and just feeling the weight of how, man, it does not, you know, sin, pain, hurt, this fallen world, brokenness, it knows no demographic. And
like we get to the place where it's going to leave us alone.
Right. And I guess I felt like maybe I had got to a spot where I felt like maybe I was going to be a little left alone. And then it was like, well, no. And I don't think God causes that. I don't think God even, quote unquote, allows that. I think we live in a fallen world. Fall, keyword, equals break. And there's just tremendous brokenness. And so the record is story after story after story of those personal stories of mine or someone very close to me of that journey of realizing, okay, there's brokenness again, there's brokenness again. And I think there's three kinds of brokenness. There's the brokenness, like for me, that my marriage fell apart and everybody knew. Okay, well, can't hide that anymore. Everybody knows you're separated and you're talking to lawyers and looking at getting a divorce. So clearly you don't have it all together and you're broken. Well, then there's the broken of you know it, but you keep hiding it from everybody else. But God knows. And so whether that's your addiction, that's your obsession, your whatever it is, there's this brokenness that you feel like, okay, I know God knows, but as long as nobody else does, that you just keep hiding and you let grow. And then there's the brokenness that you're completely unaware of until the bottom falls out. And I feel like I've been through all of those. I feel like, you know, my marriage was on this for all to see as tremendously broken. And in that season, walking through that, some of that stuff that I've been kind of keeping even from myself, it just had to be dealt with. But then even getting to a place where I'm like, wait a minute, I did not know I still struggled with pride. Wait a minute, I did not realize this would make me this insecure and give me such a bad attitude. Man, I didn't realize this would make me feel arrogant still. I did it, and you just fill in the blank, and so on and so forth. And so I feel like music is an incredible tool to create opportunity for you to speak truth out loud. A very wise person told me once, the heart will not believe what the mouth will not speak. And music is an incredible tool to create that truth coming out of your mouth. You can look in the mirror at yourself and say, I feel ugly. But you can also look at the mirror and say, God says I'm beautiful. Hmm. And you can say, I feel alone. But I am not alone. God is with me. And just one after the other, everything that you feel is not always fact, first of all. But regardless, speak the truth out loud. And so I feel like these songs on Beautifully Broken speak to this brokenness. And like I said, the way that they kind of connect with Fight for Her, the book, is that the brokenness in us as women and creating community that can help us identify that brokenness, help us address it, help us heal from it. You know, that book is sort of a practical tool that can stand alone as a book for you to read, or you can use it, like you just said, with the discussion questions. You can even use those in a small group to say, hey, let's be able to talk to each other better. Let's how do we become more honest with each other that's motivated by the Holy Spirit and we speak truth in love? How can we do that? However, there's a record that you can also listen to that gives you some really intimate time with Jesus that you can say, you know, there's a song, like I just said, about saying I'm not alone. There's a record called I'm Not Alone that addresses the struggle that I have on a daily basis with fear and anxiety. The enemy loves to use fear and anxiety as a real motivator for me to feel afraid and to doubt and to question. And when I sing that song, I have nothing to fear. I'm not alone. My God is right here. I'm not alone. It's a very simple song, but it's a very powerful truth that you're speaking out loud. And so I named it Beautifully Broken because the song Beautifully Broken specifically addresses that no matter what you've done or has been done to you, what really matters is who you belong to. And who you belong to says you are beautiful in your brokenness. I can make you whole again. I can heal your scars. I can use them for my kingdom. Trust me with them, because in all of it, you are beautiful to me, and you have value and purpose for the kingdom that I'm advancing. And so that song just spoke to the whole record's brokenness. And so I named the record Beautifully Broken because of that. But like I said, I'm in a real season of coming face to face, eye to eye with some of my own brokenness, and being able to therapeutically kind of maneuver through that is a way for me to. And so that's very therapeutic for me, but it's also accountable. There's an accountability that comes in the leadership of saying, okay, I'm going to speak this truth out loud because I believe it is true, even if I don't feel it, but I'm going to put it out there because I need to be held accountable to it. And and then I want to walk alongside you. Like, if you're listening to this, I'm in this with you. I need you and you need me. We need each other, whether it's a book or a record or just that coffee that you have with somebody. We all have tremendous, tremendous value in being that support to each other and holding each other up in our frailty because we have it. And so for all the people that are listening that are saying, oh, man, that's me. I'm the one that it's on display for all to see, or I'm the one that keeps hiding it from everybody, or I'm the one that maybe I'm self-aware. There is somebody else that's going, I don't really know what you're talking about. I mean, I'm sure somewhere deep down inside I've probably made a mistake or something, but my life's pretty awesome. That's great that you know, that your life feels pretty awesome. That's incredible. But inevitably, because of the fallen world that we live in, there is going to be brokenness, whether you believe that about yourself or not. And I think something I love to talk about is social capital. That community that you build by being able to accept your brokenness and be open about it and heal from it. That brokenness that ties you to other relationships where you can fight for each other, even if you have to have conflict. All of that builds social capital, which is one of the most intensely valuable things you'll have in all of your life, because no amount of fortune, no amount of fame, no amount of stuff, no amount of accolades or statuses, there's going to be seasons where you have more money than others and you're more popular than others, or you look better at this season than you did last, or whatever. But all of that ebbs and flows. But there is something so anchoring in having social capital, of having real rich community in your life that will continue to speak truth to you and love you well, so that you can, on that journey of the ebb and flow, you can at least stay on that path of becoming more and more who Jesus wants you to be. You can't do that by yourself. And so I just feel like this record and this book both kind of offer that person that's trying to find that kind of community and be that kind of person. It's offering them some practical ways and steps to do that.
Absolutely. Friends, the voice you're listening to is Plum. The book is Fight for Her, Even If You Have to Fight Her. And Plum, I also know that you're working on a movie project. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, there is a movie coming out called Ba-Dum-Bum, Beautifully Broken. It's in theaters everywhere, August 24th, and I had the privilege of writing the title track song to the film. And so that will be in theaters August 24th, so everybody should make plans, so please check that out. When I wrote Beautifully Broken, the song, I wrote it from, like I said, the perspective of brokenness that I deal with myself, knowing after doing this for 2 decades, I know that when I am struggling with something, someone else is too. Mm-hmm. And there is so much healing that comes from, and hope that comes from, hearing someone else say, yeah, me too, or I've been there as well, or I'm right where you're at. You have hope. In that moment, you just have hope because you know, like, something back here says, you know, I'm not alone. God says I'm not alone. But sometimes we feel alone. And to have that humanity element of another human being saying, hey, I struggle with that too, or I did that too, or that was me last year, or hey, I'm going through that right alongside you. All of that is so empowering. And so when I was writing the song, and this film was coming out, I asked them, you know, is there a broken girl in that story somewhere? Because I write from the perspective that I know. I write from what I know. I'm not a good songwriter when it comes to, hey, go write a song about an apple that can dance in front of the moon with, you know, a shirt that has stars on it. Like, I mean, I just made that up. But, like, okay, I'll try to do that, but there's a really good chance that because there's not an authentic, sincere, like, human experience, a story that I'm really telling, something to just make up is really difficult for me. And so I have to write from what I know. And so Beautifully Broken was written from that perspective. And so it just ends up fitting in the film beautifully. And I'm, you know, really, really incredibly thankful. And so the film has 3 different stories of brokenness. And when you first start watching the film, you're wondering, how are these connected? And by the end of the film, you're like, wow, we are all connected. We affect each other, and we need each other. We really need each other. And our what seems like a hardship or such a burden, God can really entrust us with as a blessing that he can use to, you know, in his kingdom. And so you see that by the end of the film, of just this beautiful connection. And so I'm just honored to be a part of it. So that's August 24th.
So I just have to say that I just feel like God is really stirring the pot around here. I just talked to Bart Millard about the song and the movie I Can Only Imagine, and his mm-hmm. experience and sort of like where this is, the reservoir out of which he writes. And the two of you said exactly the same thing in terms of songwriting. Like, it's got to come from the authentic place of your own story, right? and that which rings true in the stories of others. We've also recently talked with a young woman named Chloe Howard. And if the two of you have not yet connected, I will find a way to get the two of you connected, because I'm telling you, like, the two of you resonate. You're singing off the same page. She's 18 years old, and her ministry is called Stand Beautiful. So just think that there's okay. just so much resonance. I know, so much resonance, right? All right. Well, I know that we got to let you go. Thank you for being so gracious with your time today. Friends, I don't even know how to sort of sum up who you are. The performer, songwriter, artist, author, Plum. Thank you so much for being with us today on Connecting Faith. The book is Fight for Her. The CD, the album, and the movie are Beautifully Broken. Thank you so much for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
Thank you.
All right, friends, I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll be making the connecting point. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. This is Carmen LaBerge, and I'm going to make the connecting point. So I think we'll just start by asking ourselves, hey, what's my beautifully broken story? Each one of us is broken, certainly, by sin and against sin in the world. We break ourselves against the heart and the law of God all the time. But we're also beautifully restored in Jesus Christ. We are new creations. But the scars that we bear, the former wounds, you know, they're still with us. They're still a part of who we are. We have a beautifully broken story, and that's a story of redemption. It occurs to me, we just talked last week with Chloe Howard and Linda Gibson about their beautifully broken stories. I certainly commend those podcasts to you. You can find them on the Connecting Faith page at myfaithradio.com. But I was also reminded that a couple of years ago, it was actually August the 3rd, 2016, I talked with a woman named Andrea Castile-Smith. And She has a book and that has grown into a movement as well, and it's called Scarred Beautiful. And it aligns with Chloe Howard's Stand Beautiful and Plum's Beautifully Broken messages and the conversations that we've just been having seemingly with some frequency here on Connecting Faith. And so I thought I would go back and I would revisit for myself Andrea's story. And, you know, it's not as if I can actually remember every conversation that I've had with every guest over the course of years. But this one I do remember because I included part of it in my book, Speak the Truth. And so I just want to share with you this idea that each and every one of us has a story. And our story is what gives our witness to Christ an authenticity. And it also creates in us an empathy for other people. So I want to really challenge you to think about your own story and to think about the fact that people actually want to hear your story. I want you to think about where God appears in your story. And the more personal you can make it, the better. God's not an idea. God is a person. And so if we can tell our story by direct reference to God and direct reference to interactions we've had with God and how God has shown up and how God has redeemed and how God has restored and how God has not left us nor abandoned us nor forsaken us, even if in periods and points of time we thought maybe he had. I think too often in our conversations, we turn very quickly to authorities that we trust, authorities that we love, like the Bible and the church. But in reality, people who are not yet in love with God have no reason to submit themselves to the authority of the scriptures of the Old and New Testaments, nor to submit themselves in any way to the authority of the church, or even desire to have fellowship with the people of the church. And so God intends that you and I would do what Chloe Howard and Linda Gibson and Andrea Castile Smith and Plum have done and are doing, which is to put their story out there. And so whatever your beautifully broken story is, whatever your scarred beautiful story is, whatever your stand beautiful story is, I want to really encourage you to sort of dig it out, maybe write it down, and start telling it. Find places and opportunities to tell your story. Stick with statements that begin with, in my experience, or I have come to see, or my experience with God has led me to, you fill in the blank. And you have to talk about the dark valleys. You have to talk about the times of doubt. You have to talk about the wounds and the wanderings. Our conversation partners out there in the world, they know pain. They know loneliness. But God's actually wired them the same way that he has wired you and me, with a very deep desire for a restored relationship with him and for the future filled with hope that he has planned, for justice and mercy and love, not just for brokenness and woundedness and pain. So if you can tell your story and you are not afraid to show that you have journeyed on a path through the wilderness, that you have wandered around, then you may just find that you get to walk with another person long enough to help them find the way themselves. Now, some of you are probably thinking right now, I don't have a story. I don't have a story. My life from conception to present moment has been flawless. It's been great. You have a story. It's simply not true to say that we don't have a story of brokenness or wounding or wandering. So if it helps, I'd encourage you to like grab a piece of paper, draw a line on it. There's a timeline. Actually go back before your birthday to your conception and sort of chronicle your life on a timeline. Fill in the highs and the lows and then fill in some of the in-betweens. Start with the circumstances of your conception. Were your parents married, unmarried? Maybe you're the product of IVF. Maybe you're the product of rape. Do you know who your father is? What were the circumstances of your birth? Were you a preemie or adopted or born with a condition? Have you survived cancer? Are you living with chronic pain or disability?
Were you a standout athlete? Did you win the lottery? Have you experienced divorce? Are you widowed? Have you never married and wished you were? Are you childless but wish you weren't? Have you walked with someone you love to the end of the valley of the shadow of death and then come back through the grief to a life redefined? Were you a prodigal? Do you have a history, directly or indirectly, with addiction? Did someone you love take their own life? Have you ever been homeless, hungry, unable to pay the bills? Have you been to war or suffered the post-traumatic stress of it with someone you love? Is your child not like all those other kids? Do you have an eating disorder? Were you a victim of assault or abuse? Have you ever been to jail? You have a story. I asked Andrea Castile Smith for permission to tell her story in my book, Speak the Truth, and she agreed. She tells the whole story in her book, Scarred Beautiful. But to summarize, I'll just say this. By all accounts, Andrea had it all. Family, financial security, faith community, beauty, friends. Until the night she was arrested in her own driveway for driving under the influence. She'd only driven a few blocks. She'd only had a few drinks. But she bore the full weight of the penalty of her sin, including spending a full month in the county jail. She was broken at every level of her being, and the lowest point came when her physical scars, the result of skin grafts when she was an infant, were exposed in multiple strip searches with male guards looking on. Andrea tells her story of redemption with a piercing authenticity that cuts through skepticism. You cannot read her story or hear her story and deny the reality of the God who was there, the God who spoke, the God who healed, the God who redeemed, and the God who has now given her a new purpose in helping other scarred, beautiful people tell their stories as well. So if you're a redeemed sinner, you have a story. And that story is the undeniable truth of the gospel through which God desires to reach into the heart of other people. You have a story, and it's an eternal story. Every person you ever meet on every day of every year is a person with an eternal story. Your story has the power to influence that other person's perspective on their life and themselves and God and eternity. And that is a gospel calling. So you might have a friend who grew up in something other than an idyllic situation. You might have a friend who doesn't know that God formed them in his will and in his imagination before the foundations of the earth. You might have a friend who's missing out on the reality that God is a person and not just any person. You might have a friend who thinks that they have to do all the right things and that anything that they've ever done that's wrong forever separates them from the love of God. But you know that in Christ Jesus, that's not true. So you actually have the privilege of helping people see that which is good and beautiful and true by telling your story. You have the opportunity by telling your story of redemption to have them see and know who God is. The Apostle Paul has a story that's not only worth knowing, it's worth repeating. And so you could use the second half of the book of Acts to tell Paul's story. You could also use the book of Philippians. And you could continually tell the stories of the characters of Scripture whose lives were transformed by Jesus Christ. If you're looking for an easy conversation starter, here's one. Look at a person and say, "What's on your mind?" And if they say nothing, you have a wide open door, providing an opportunity to, you know, start on a subject. And your subject could just be, "Let me tell you a story." Most people aren't giving God much conscious thought, but we as Christians ought to be giving him every conscious thought. And so part of that is learning to tell our story as a part of his story. All right, friends, that's all the time we've got today here on Connecting Faith. It's a pleasure every day to be with you. Visit me online at myfaithradio.com, the Connecting Faith page. You can follow me on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge. You can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com, and you can visit my ministry website, reconnectwithcarmen.com. Friends, I want you to have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.